May I have your attention, please? The following is not the real Jeff Foxworthy.
If your beehives have a fresh coat of paint, but your house doesn't, you might be a beekeeper. If you didn't know that fondant was for wedding cake decorating, you might be a beekeeper. If when somebody asks you about your bees and your mouth doesn't stop flapping for 20 minutes, you might love bees.
Welcome, welcome to Bee Love Beekeeping Podcast, presented by our good friends over at Man Lake. At Bee Love, we're all about the honeybees and, of course, the beekeepers. Today, we'll be going all the way over to France for a discussion with a PhD entomologist to learn what honeybees think about. But first, there have been some intriguing honeybee stories in the news the last few days. Have you heard about putting QR codes on bees? Yeah, it's a real thing. Researchers in the eastern U.S. have actually glued individual QR codes to the backs of 32,000 honeybees. So this is a study. It's a collaboration between electrical engineers and entomologists at Penn State University. What they're doing is analyzing the time that bees spend outside the hive for foraging and other things that they're doing. Here's a quote from one of the researchers. In field biology, we usually just look at things with our eyes, but the number of observations we can make as humans will never scale up to what a machine can do. So here's what they're doing. They've made a special entrance with a sensor camera on it that tracks the tagged bees' movements 24/7. So the QR codes that are attached to the back of the bees are called fiduciary markers. And the greatest advantage of these tags is that they allow scientists to quietly and non-invasively observe the bees without disturbing their natural habitats. So, kind of cool. They have some preliminary results on things that they're finding. For example, the majority of the flights are actually quite short, 1 to 4 minutes. But of course, when bees are out foraging, they can be gone for a lot longer than that. And the team has begun collaborating with Virginia Tech to analyze the relationship between foraging duration and waggle dance information. The researchers also plan to tag queen and drone bees to venture deeper into bee colony dynamics. So it'll be interesting to see what they learn. The other story I wanted to mention today comes to us from Valencia Island in Ireland, where bee beds are all the rage. So what is a bee bed, you ask? Well, Paul O'Neill, who lives on this island, has built a wooden house with two beds, each with 5 beehives underneath. The idea is that you lie down and just experience the micro vibrations of the bees. They say it feels like you're in the heart of a beehive. In addition to the vibrations, you get the smell of pheromones and a soft humming sound. There's even heat that comes off of the bees, which naturally warms the house several degrees higher than the outside temperature. The hives are said to purify and ionize the air. Paul says that bee beds have been used in Eastern Europe for centuries. They claim that it helps reduce stress, sleep disorders, respiratory issues, fatigue, tinnitus, and other ailments. And guess what? Tourists are flocking in for the experience. I gotta tell you, it sounds kind of wonderful. All right, let's get to today's guest. We are going all the way across the pond again to Toulouse, France, to talk with Dr. I'm just going to call you Dr. Matthew, if that's okay.
That's perfect. My name is Mathieu Lioro.
Yes, it is. And thank you for that, for getting me off the hook on that one. I tried to pronounce it earlier and failed miserably, and I don't want to pronounce your name wrong. So we'll just go from there. You're in France, and you are an animal cognition researcher and a beekeeper, and do a lot of research and study with honeybees and bumblebees and other bees. Could you give us just a little idea of your background?
So I am what we call an ethologist. I study animal behavior and I have a master in biology, ecology, basically. I did a PhD, not on bees, but already in insects. I worked on cockroaches. I studied their social life.
I'm not reading that research, by the way, on the cockroach behavior. Sorry.
But it's fascinating. Maybe we can discuss another time. After these 3 to 4 years studying cockroaches, I wanted something more exotic or outside, let's say. I wanted to see the animals in their natural environments.
So you have a book out that this is what caught my attention and made me reach out to you from thousands of miles away. You have a book out called What Do Bees Think About? Where did you come up with this whole concept?
Well, that book just tells my life as a scientist working in insect intelligence and specifically bee cognition. So I'm not the only one in the world. We are a couple. There's some guys in the US, of course. But in France, I am a bit isolated and I've been asked to write a book for the general public. And in that book, I discuss my life, so my experiments, but also the experiments of my colleagues all over the world, and the state of the art of what we know about bee behavior, bee cognition, and bee ecology.
Well, I'm going to be putting you on the spot today. I hope you don't mind. But before we do, you know, I haven't read your book yet. I have read one called The Honeybee Democracy. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, of course. Tom Seeley, okay. The colleague, yeah.
Yeah, Tom Seeley, and I learned a lot about honeybee behavior from that. But what it didn't tell me was, what are bees actually thinking? Now, do you claim to really know what they're thinking or just have some ideas from their behavior?
Well, we try to understand what they're thinking about. So that's the whole question in the book. What are they thinking about? And in fact, people have asked this question with professional research since a century ago. So famous people have started to design experiments and test first what did bees see, what did bees hear, what did bees smell, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then as we progressed in this research, we started to understand what bees learn, what bees remember, what bees understand of a problem, et cetera, et cetera. And today, really the discussion in my community is do bees have a consciousness? Can bees feel emotions? Can bees play?
Can bees play? Well, I want to hear the answer to that. Do bees play?
Well, this is not a definitive answer, but some experiments suggest that they play, yeah, that they have positive emotions. Of course, these are pioneer studies, very recent. The study I have in mind is went out last year. But basically, this study demonstrated that bumblebees in a lab can be trained to choose color stimuli, not based on sugar reward, but based on the ability to play, to roll balls. What this experiment shows that you can condition bees to associate a color to ball rolling. And this is completely new in insect science, of course. But if you do this experiment with a mammal, then you have no problem to conclude that this is play behavior.
That's fascinating. You mentioned their memory. What kinds of things do they remember?
Many things. Of course, they learn to recognize each other with odors. So there's a common odor in a colony. And so the bees, since very early development, learn to recognize the odor of their own colony. And then when they start going out to forage, at that moment, they have to learn many things. And the first thing they have to learn is the position of their nests in the environments. They have to relocate the nests. So at that moment, we think that they take mental pictures of the environments, the surrounding of the nests, the panorama, the small landmarks, the trees, the houses, bushes, etc. So that when they come back from a long foraging trip, they can pinpoint the nest very efficiently. And all these visual and spatial memories, they develop them from different areas that they explore. So they build kind of mental map of the environment. And that's for their whole life. So we know that.
Now, speaking of that memory of the nest, what if we have 10 beehives on stands all right next to each other? Do they really remember which one is theirs? Would it help if we had our hives different colors, something like that?
Yes, exactly. It will help. When you put them in this situation, it's a natural situation. In nature, this will not happen because there's competition between the colonies and they don't found their nests at the same place. When you put them all together in the rotation, then of course you see that many get confused and there is drift. So I think it's about 20% of the workers in a colony when they are next to each other that do not pertain to that colony. So there is an exchange of workers between colonies, probably because the bees get lost and confused. They go in the wrong nest. So it helps if you mark the colonies with different colors or different shapes to identify them clearly. And it helps the bees to remember where they come from.
Well, I appreciate that because I want to take some of the things that you've learned and figure out how we can put those into practical something for us to be better beekeepers. And if that means we have 10 hives in a row, and it would help if they were different colors or a red X or a, oh, they don't see red, do they? Yeah.
Oh, red is dark for them. It's gray.
Yeah. So, okay, that was a bad example, but a purple X or a blue, I don't know, something to help them really find their way to their exact home versus drifting to others. That completely makes sense to do some things like that. Now, I think one thing as beekeepers that we tend to do, especially hobbyists, those of us that just have a few hives, and we love our bees so much, right? We tend to humanize them. Meaning, when I open up a hive, I put assumptions on what they are thinking. And there are some days where I think, they think I'm a bear and I'm coming to tear them to shreds and they're going to tear me to shreds first. And there's other days where I assume that they are thinking, oh, look at this nice guy. He's whistling. He feeds us sometimes. He's such a, we love him, right? Okay. What are they actually thinking? What do they make of us when we get into their homes?
Well, this we don't really know. I do exactly like you. I mean, that's called anthropomorphism. And that's something we should be aware of when you do research. You project yourselves into the animal and think for them as you would think in that situation. This anthropomorphism can help to give you some ideas of things to look at when you're a researcher. But of course, you need to stop very quickly to be anthropomorphic if you want to be scientifically correct. So what exactly your bees think about you when you come on different days, I have no idea. I just can give you some insights of things that we understand from their behavior in particular situation. For instance, I told you they learn many things when they go outside. We know that they communicate very accurately with odors. So if you perturbate the odors in the hive, then you perturbate their communication, for instance.
I'm wondering what things they teach each other versus what things are just very instinctual. For example, even though I live in the mountains, we don't have any bears close by very often. And so generations, many generations may pass between the time that my bees have seen a bear, yet they know, don't they, that instinctually that bears are bad. And this is a problem if we see a bear. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, as we understand it, it's very instinctive. So any animals have their part of instinctive behavior and learned behavior. We are also instinctive organisms. And our emotions are instinctive, for instance. So we know that bees tend to attack dark shapes. And if there is fur, it's even more attractive to them. So that's the description of a bear, roughly speaking. So we think that there has been a co-evolution between bears and bees, and so that the bees are imprinted in their DNA that this type of signal, visual signal, is dangerous, and they will tend to sting everything that is dark and hairy, basically. So very instinctive. And generally in the animal kingdom, instinctive behaviors are linked to reproduction and survival, which are the two main important traits. So that's instinctive. Then of course they teach each other a lot of things. You are probably aware of the honeybee woggle dance. So this communication system by which the bees indicate to the other bees from the same colony where to find food or where to find a new nesting site. So this is a complex communication that happens in the nest, whereby a bee that has found a spot, food or nesting sites, come back in the nest and do a H-shaped walk, in the middle of which there is a waggle phase. And in this H-shaped walk with the waggle phase is encoded the location of a target site, food or a nesting site. And this communication is made in the dark of the hive. The bee cannot point directly to the other bees. Where is the place? They communicate this in the dark of the hive, and this is called a symbolic communication. And symbolic communication is something that is not that common in the animal kingdom. So this is quite exceptional.
So what can we learn from that? Knowing that they do that, is there anything that we can take away that we can help them with?
Yes, so this communication happens in two contexts, as I said, and we could use this communication to attract the bee population, for instance, in particular places, places where, for instance, we know it is safe for them to come and forage, places far from pesticides, for instance, or places that we would like the bees to visit to pollinate a crop, for instance. So as beekeepers, as farmers, you could very well think that you may be able to attract bees in certain areas with a feeder with sugar solution, high percentage of sugar solution, train the bees to go in this area. They will communicate and recruit other bees to go in this area, and you will have a population of bees visiting your area of interest. And then at some point, you could just remove the feeder. The bees will continue to come back in this area, and they will accidentally happen to forage on the flowers that are nearby. So either because you want them to be pollinated or because you want the bees not to go in other areas that have been treated with harmful pesticides, for instance.
So let me make sure that I get that. So, for example, around me, within a mile around me, I have some neighbors that are organic farmers and grow things like sainfoin and stuff, which is great for the bees. I have other neighbors that are growing this, what they call Roundup Ready alfalfa, and they bomb it with Roundup all the time. So, and they're pretty much equal distances away. So you're saying if I were to take some kind of open feeder with syrup, put it in the good field I want them to go to, they are much more likely to go there than where all the Roundup is being sprayed.
Exactly, because of communication. So the bees that you train to go there will recruit more bees, and your population of bees will more likely go to the field that you decided. Of course, it's not 100%. You may have bees
sure.
that found the other site. But still, it increases the probability that your bees don't get contaminated.
That could make a huge difference. How could we apply that to catching swarms?
So the bees also communicate nesting sites when it comes time to swarming. And so we have exploratory bees that scouts that goes, explore the environments, finds potential nesting sites, evaluate the parameters of these nesting sites, come back to the nest or the swarm and do the dance. And through a system of voting, we have the bee population that will, at some point, go away, swarm, and install in one of the sites that have been decided by the collectivity. So if you want to catch swarms, one solution would be to provide the bee population, empty hives or attractive empty nesting sites.
Sure. We have what we call swarm traps. Again, based on Tom Seeley's book, you can get dimensions and things that he found actually worked best on what the bees are looking for. But would you think that it would make more sense to put, say, five of those within a quarter mile area, or to spread them out a mile apart between each other?
So if you put them closer to the swarm, then you have a higher probability that they get visited.
Sure.
This is what I would say. Now, there is, of course, a distance at which I guess it will fail, because these new swarm boxes should be far enough from the mother colony. Because I guess the colonies will not establish if they are too close from each other.
Remind me, about how far away do they like to be? What is too close?
So maybe I will say stupid things. So I prefer not saying.
That's okay.
But I guess it's more than 50 meters from what I recall.
Sure. I think it's even further than that, but I don't remember the exact number. Some listener, please email us, remind us what that number is, or Dr. Seeley, you can do the same thing here. Tell me some of the other things that you've learned that we can put into practical day-to-day beekeeping that will help us out.
Beyond beekeeping, I mean, I don't know if in the U.S. you do a lot of pollination using your beehives, but at the moment we are working on many projects that try to better understand how we can increase the pollination rate with our domestic hives by putting them in the crop yards. At least in Europe, there is no real regulation, and there are only recommendations. And these recommendations about the number of hives per crop that you have to put vary from one country to the other, from 1 to 20 hives. So this is very vague and empirical practices. So we are far from mastering pollination with domestic honeybees.
Just a quick break here to thank our presenting sponsor, Man Lake. Hey, if your weather is anything like mine, it is freezing out. So let's put our creative brains together and visualize spring. Birds chirping, flowers blooming, and bees buzzing. Now let's visualize you enjoying beekeeping so much more with some new gear. Or if you're new to beekeeping and not sure what you need, give Man Lake a call, and their experienced beekeepers will help every step of the way. Protective gear, hives and tools, even packaged bees, nukes, and queens. Man Lake has it all. And don't forget your discount code, MLBLOVE10, it's in the show notes, for $10 off your first $100 purchase. I'm feeling better already. Now, back to the guest.
So what I'm trying to do at the moment is to understand how bees move in the landscape. How bees fly away, and how do they choose flowers, flower patches, trees, and how do they move between different flower patches and trees. And in my lab, we've developed radars, big machines, that scans the environment at high frequency. And these radars can identify individual bees flying around. So we can reconstruct the flight trajectory of the bee in the field. And with this, we've started to understand how bees predictably move between one point to another point, to another point, to another point, and how through experience, through trial and error, the bees develop routes between different points that are more and more efficient. At the end of the day, if you give a bee an opportunity to forage ad libitum without limit in an environment where there is always resources, that bee will develop a route that maximizes nectar collection rate or pollen collection rate by minimizing travel distances. So they solve routing problems. They can solve a physical spatial network.
So it's all about efficiency, it sounds like. How can we go out, gather what we're trying to gather as efficiently as possible, and bring it back to the hive?
Exactly. But they do this with some rules. And just to finish on this, Now we are starting to understand how a bee predictively will move between different points. That helps us understand how pollen will be transported between different points. So how plants will be pollinated and cross-fertilized in the landscape. So this is much more precise than just putting bees and enclosing the eyes and waiting for things to happen. The aim is to be able to predict these complex dynamics and one day maybe give very practical advice to farmers so that they can really envisage stopping agrochemicals and increase their crop yield with the bees.
Okay, my mind just kind of blew up for a second. Let me make sure I understand this. The eventual goal would be to be able to say, okay, here's a farm or an orchard. Here's where the bees are going to go. And you want to plant this and then this and then this in this kind of order or diameter out from the hive because it's going to most efficiently be pollinated that way. Am I getting that right?
That's an example of what we might be able to do. Either this or the opposite, put the hives at strategic places so that the bees will visit the plants that are already planted in a particular geometrical disposition at the right place.
And we do have a lot of pollination services in this country, and mostly commercial beekeepers. The biggest one is the almonds out in California. So what we may be able to learn eventually from this research is instead of just putting a pallet of hives every whatever, you know, half mile or whatever, we might want to have one here, two here, three here. We're going to learn what'll more efficiently work for them and for the pollination.
Yes, for instance, and maybe not put all the hives at the same time. Maybe after just a few days, reinforce the pool of hives in certain areas, et cetera, to maximize pollination. That's the idea. Better use the bees to provide this pollination service and perhaps ultimately reduce our impact on the environment.
So I know you're also a beekeeper yourself, in addition to a researcher and a scientist. Tell me some of the things that you love about beekeeping.
Oh, I love it, but I must admit I am a poor beekeeper, and I get stung a lot.
That doesn't make you a poor beekeeper.
But I love it. No, I am a poor beekeeper because I just don't produce any honey. I'm there, I watch the bees, I'm happy just watching the bees. So I spend hours watching the bees. That's it. What I love in this is that each time I watch a bee colony, it's different. Each time I see new behavior that I don't know how to interpret, and that give me ideas on the next research question I may ask. And of course, the smell and being outside in the countryside is lovely.
That's one thing that really surprised me one time when I had someone who's not a beekeeper that really wanted to meet my bees, and I put a bee suit on her and opened the lid. She looked in and she took a breath and she said, "That smells so good." And I guess I had gotten used to it. And she was just blown away by the smell. It's interesting that you mentioned that. What kinds of things do you observe? Just when you're just out there for fun, you mentioned that you just watch them a lot.
Yes. Well, sadly, at the moment, at this period of the year in France, we have a huge predation by hornets. You know, here we have the yellow-legged hornets that came from Asia 20 years ago. And these hornets have been introduced by mistake, but now they are all over Europe, and especially in France. We have huge populations. So hornets are important predators of bees. They have evolved hunting strategies that are fascinating. I'm also fascinated by hornets, I should say. But the bees, of course, need to defend themselves, and they have a variety of behavior. And we see there is no standard defense behaviors in our honeybees because this predation by the hornets is new. Last 20 years, there has not been co-evolution between these hornets and our bees. So you can see the bees are trying different things, and it varies depending on colonies. So in some colonies, the bees just aggregate outside, and they make the ground is just bees, bodies of bees, so that the hornets will not land on the hive plate. In some colonies, you can see that some brave honeybees try to attack the hornets, but this is always a failure. And you can see many, many, many behaviors like this that emerge, and that probably will not be selected by natural selection. But it's fun and very intriguing to see all these attempts.
What kinds of things have you seen that either the bees developed or people have developed to help the bees out to fight the hornets?
Oh, this is a big thing in Europe. Some beekeepers are very ingenious, and it's also a very diverse pool of people. So some have opted for more traditional ways to isolate the hives from the hornets with a system of grid, metallic grid that you can put in front of the hive. The mesh size is calculated so that only the bees can go through, and the hornets, which are larger, cannot go through. And the more ingenious people have started to develop electric apps. So these are, again, a grid of iron mesh that you can plug. So there is an electric field in it. And the distance between the wires is calculated so that a bee can go through, but the hornet, which is larger, cannot. And then they get burned if they go through.
You're zapped.
This is very popular at the moment. This is probably the most efficient way to control the populations locally. But of course, very ingenious people have now started to develop a tracking system, radio telemetry, for instance. So you put a transponder on the hornet with a big antenna. And then with your receptors, you can follow the hornet at the moment where he goes back to the nest with a honeybee in the middle of his legs. So the hornet will go straight towards the nest, and you can follow it, identify where the nest, because these nests are up in the trees, and often you don't see them, you cannot notice them with your eyes. And once the nest is located, then you can destroy it or remove it. Some people are also working on drones that would automatically follow the hornets and locate the nests. I know that some colleagues are working on a laser system, so that would be embarked on the drone to destroy the nest with the drone. So you just emit the laser signal in the nest and destroy the nest.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of ingenious stuff going on. It's almost like you're getting ready to plant a bomb on that hornet. It goes back and just blows up the nest.
Exactly, yes. And so, as I say, these hornets are occupying the mind of many, many beekeepers, and we have many here in Europe that have different specialties, and many are engineers. So they come up with very interesting and clever solutions.
I want to see some of those. You did mention earlier about tracking bees. Do you put some kind of a transponder on them too? Is that how you do it?
Yes. So I use what we call harmonic radars. So this is technology from the army, from the marine. This is a very, very robust technology. And indeed, you need to put a small antenna, a small transponder on the bee, very light. This is a dipole, so this is a passive transponder, doesn't emit anything, there is no battery. And then the radar will scan the environment, emitting a radar wave, and part of this radar wave would be re-emitted by the transponder. So you don't get all the signal of all the things in your environment, it would be too noisy. You're just looking for your target, which is the transponder. And with this system, with our systems, we can track a bee up to 1 kilometer. And now we have a system where we have many of these radars. So we have a network of radars so that we can track the bees for their whole home range.
You make science sound interesting. I'd love to come and participate in some of it sometime. Hey, on a more personal note, we were going to meet last week. You had to cancel at the very last minute because of a fire. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was a disaster last week. Just before our interview, I learned that part of my lab has burnt. So in Toulouse at the university, we have two different types of labs, the wet labs in which we do behavioral experiments in very controlled conditions. And of course, we have an experimental apiary in which we have our honey beehives. We have 50 of them, maybe, and different labs in cabins. One of these cabins was on fire. We don't know what caused this. Very, very hopefully, very thankfully, we had the firefighters that came after just 5 minutes because they are nearby the university. So they stopped everything, but yeah, the building burnt and we lost almost all the equipment for the beekeepers. That's very sad, but the good news is that the bees are nothing. So no bee has been harmed.
And no people.
And no people, of course, yeah.
Good. Good. Well, I'm sorry that happened. Have you ever had anything just really surprise you about honeybees?
The dance already is something extremely surprising. As I said earlier, this kind of symbolic communication is something we know in humans and some other primates, and that's about it. So either it's only evolved in a few animals, and honeybees are one of them. Either this is something that exists in the whole animal kingdom, but we haven't been able to discover it. So that's crazy. More recently, so because the honeybee dance has been discovered in the 1950s, so it's already an old discovery. But more recently, we've started to understand that bees also learn from each other, not by communicating directly, but by observing each other. So bees can observe other bees and learn from them. So the most striking experiments have been done on bumblebees. Bumblebees are organized more or less like honeybees, although the colonies are much smaller. But there is a queen, there are workers, there is a division of labor with foragers, cleaners, guards, etc. And in these bumblebees are very, very great models because you can test them in the lab. They accommodate very well with artificial lights. They can solve plastic Y-maze. They can roll balls. Anyway, they can do lots of stupid things in a lab. Especially using these animals, we were able to demonstrate that bumblebees can learn new behavior from observing other bumblebees. How it works, for instance, we recently trained bumblebees to pull a rope to access a platform with sugar solution. So this platform is below a plexiglass plate, and the bees has to pull the rope to train the platform beyond the plexiglass plate and access to sugar solution. So already this, you can teach bees to do this if you have time and patience. What is interesting is that once you've taught one bee to do this, this bee becomes a demonstrator, and then you can put other bees from the same species behind a window. And so these bees can see the demonstrator pulling ropes, which is an unnatural task. Bees don't do that in nature. Then these observing bees, you can put them in the arena and let them do what they have to do. And in most of the cases, these naive bees that just observed one bee pulling a rope start pulling a rope and so on. So bees can learn to pull ropes through observation, and they can also learn to ameliorate this behavior with experience. So we have the emergence within a bee colony of the emergence of a new behavior that is transmitted within the population through observation.
That is crazy. How many other animals can do that?
Well, animal cultures is something that scientists have discovered since the 70s. Of course, firstly in the primates. Maybe you are aware of these monkeys, these macaques in Japan that wash their potatoes in the sea. so that the potatoes are salty and it's better. And we have some population of macaques that do that. They are very particular. Then there has been examples in birds. In England, you have these blue tits that have learned to open the milk bottles. And through observation, this behavior has spread in the city. And this is not true for populations from nearby cities. So really it's cultural transmission. But in invertebrates, in insects, this is the first and only example so far.
That's really cool. I just saw a video recently online, a short video of two bees opening up a bottle of some kind of fruity juice. Have you seen that? Or sugary juice?
Oh, I haven't seen that. What do they do exactly?
Well, the lid is already loose, but the two of them figure out how to actually turn it until it comes off, and then they can get into the sugary drink. And I'm just wondering, now they probably didn't observe that someplace else. They somehow had to learn that on their own. I don't know. Maybe that's your next experiment to study with or something.
Exactly. And we are at the moment trying to see if we could observe cooperative behavior like this in bees.
Yeah.
So collective problem solving in artificial conditions in bees. Yeah, this is something we are looking at the moment.
So it's both cooperative and they either are smart enough to figure it out, or you're talking about observation. Is it possible they observed people doing it and then figured out how to do it together?
Wow. This,
I don't know.
This is an open question. This is a good question. But at the moment, it's a difficult question to answer. I think we have more to understand about their behavior and how they copy each other first before the human-bee relationship.
I'm just coming up with more experiments for you. If I happen to see that video, I'll send it over to you.
Sure.
Okay. Any last words of wisdom you can leave with us before we sign off today?
I know beekeepers are already aware that bees are smart animals. And this is something we are studying with patients here and in other labs in the world. As I mentioned at the very beginning of this discussion, nowadays the question is not whether the bees are smart or not, but the lively debated questions at the moment is whether they have some sort of consciousness, emotions. So what is the complexity of their inner lives? And that's something that we didn't dare asking 10 years ago. So this is very new, very ongoing research with complex concepts that every day reduces the distance between us and the bees.
So are you finding answers to that yet?
Well, there is elements of answers. Of course, there's low answers, but we have bees that behave like if they were happy. Bees that behave like if they played. Bees like behave like if they understand a problem. Bees that know very well how to navigate. Bees that can copy each other. And all of this is a signature of consciousness.
That is super interesting. I appreciate it, Dr. Mathieu
Lioro.
Is that pretty close?
Yes.
Thanks a ton for being on with me today.
Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Bee Love Beekeeping, presented by Man Lake. Please, right now, before you forget, hit that follow or subscribe button, rate and comment on the show, then be sure to share it with a friend. We're building a community here, and we want to hear from you. Send your crazy stories, guest recommendations, new gadgets, or anything else that you'd like to hear about on the show to eric@beelovebeekeeping.com. And remember, if you're not just in it for the honey or the money, you're in it for the love. See you next week.